Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino online.
I was only playing for fun, so winning was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's favorite free online social casino. You too could have the chance to win life-changing cash prizes. Absolutely anybody could be like Mary. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and play for free now. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice of the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of the winner.
The tea is very hot.
I am rolling. All right. One, two, three. Hey, speaking of butts, do you ever think about how, like, this is how farts work? Like, this is how they make noise? Because it's just a butt cheese laughing together. Anyway.
That's horrifying.
Whose turn is it to introduce?
I think it's mine.
Yeah, okay.
Hello, and welcome back to the Post-Production Podcast. My name's Rachel.
And my name is Kiri.
And this is, indeed, the Post-Production Podcast. You may be shocked to learn that we are, in fact, a podcast that, while occasionally is about production, is about so much more. Tell them, Kiri.
Yeah, sometimes we just roast movies. Last episode, we had a lot of negative things to say about Captain Marvel.
Sorry, Brie Larson.
Put this out there. If you even still listen to us and you like Captain Marvel, if we made you feel bad for liking something, you're sorry. It's okay.
Well, and I will say I felt bad because an article came out this week about how bad Brie Larson feels about Captain Marvel.
Oh.
And I was like, wow, that is just horrifyingly timely, given the fact that I'm still roasting her movie like 2 or 3 years later.
And you know, I would say that Rachel and I are both in need of a fresh perspective. So if you like Captain Marvel, please feel free to slide into our DMs and tell @Kiri_Jones @RachelHNH on Instagram and tell us what you like about Captain Marvel, because I think
true that
we could use some positivity. And you know, objectively, it's not a bad movie. But subjectively, we just didn't like it very much.
True that.
So that's an important distinction.
And that there, movies. Listeners, is a very example of the rabbit trails
example.
That you will find on this podcast. So, welcome again to the Post-Production Podcast. We're stoked you're here. And this week, we are talking about something that is not movies.
Yes, yes. We try to space out our topics a little bit, because we talk about movies and music and TV award shows a couple times, and just our jobs, event production.
It's true. We are both women working in various forms of AV production.
It's actually pretty similar now that we both have solid jobs.
It is now, yeah.
But I think between the two of us, we both have touched pretty much everything.
It's true, yeah. I think Kiri and I both have worked sort of as audiovisual, lighting, music, live event generalists. I'd say.
And video production.
Yeah, for sure. While you may come to this podcast seeking experts in every field of media production, I can assure you this is the wrong place for that. Because while we do have episodes that are educational, this podcast is more so just about enjoying various aspects of production. And sometimes that looks like dissecting a movie. Sometimes that looks like talking to you guys or with a guest about a specific topic in the world of media production, and sometimes it looks like taking a BuzzFeed quiz. You never know. It's a little different every week.
It's been a while since we've done one of those.
Yeah, for real. So at the end of the day, our goal is just to hang out with you guys and talk about whatever we want, because we can.
Oh, speaking of movies, I watched Thor Love and Thunder the other day.
Oh dear.
I think we should save it for a future couple of episodes from now. We give our listeners some time to watch it before we review it, but yes,
true.
We do have a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so today we are going to talk about something that is very relevant to our upbringings, for sure.
So true.
Yeah, Rachel and I both grew up with fathers who worked in worship music ministry in churches and such. So we're going to talk a bit about some of the music that we have been exposed to and even performed, because Rachel does that as well.
It's true. So yeah.
Following in her father's footsteps.
Buckle up for the Christian music episode, baby, because this is
Yeehaw.
It.
where should we start? Because there's a lot of different directions that this could go.
It really is. I think, I don't know.
Should we talk about when we met Michael W. Smith?
Oh, my Lord. That might actually have to come later, because I think for us to explain the Michael W. Smith story, we have to explain the way we were raised first.
Oh, yes.
Because consider...
The way we were raised.
The way we were raised.
Short form on a podcast.
I say it in such a dramatic form, but I think for many people, they grow up and their primary genre is just like whatever their parents listen to, right?
Yeah.
And so for some people... You know, they'll say like, oh, I listen to classic rock because like my dad and I always used to listen to classic rock when I was a kid. Or like, oh, I listen to like 80s pop because like that's what my mom liked when I was growing up. Well, I don't know about you, Kiri, but I can say that like my parents both listened to various flavors of contemporary Christian music when I was a kid.
Yep.
You know, with a little classic rock mixed in there from my dad. But for the most part, it was like,
exactly the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our dads would be best friends, I think.
No, they really would. Like, my mom would always listen to K-Love, like the Christian radio station that is like kind of a nationwide syndicate at that, at least at that point. I think it still is. And then my dad would get into the car and he would wait till my mom got out of the car and we'd listen to like one more contemporary Christian song. And then he'd switch it to whatever station was playing Bon Jovi at that moment.
That sounds so like, it's like copy paste what happened with my parents. Although my mom didn't mind the 80s music quite as much. But yeah, my dad was really into classic rock as well. But I didn't like it because I was like, this is not Christian music. This is not okay. Because I was raised to think that like, okay, there's only so much I can actually blame on my parents, but this one I will pin on them. I had this epiphany recently that like, I tend to think that things that are mainstream, like I'm a lot slower to like watch and listen to things that are mainstream. And I think that stems from my childhood being like, we do things differently because we pretty much only listen to Christian music and we only watch VeggieTales and PBS. Everything else is of the world and therefore it's bad and therefore it is wrong and we are right and we are better than everyone else. And so I've been breaking through that as an adult. There's still little pieces of the I am better than everyone else that I've noticed, trying to work through that attitude. But
yeah,
where was I going with this?
Well,
welcome to post-production therapy.
Oh my gosh, no kidding. I mean, I don't know. We probably should have seen the Christian music episode coming when we when we had our first concert episode, and I shared that my first concert was a Skillet concert.
Yeah.
And for context, for those of you who don't know, Skillet is like a popular and longstanding Christian rock band that exclusively does like super angsty headbanging rock music about like God.
They're one of those bands that could pass as a mainstream band because sometimes they don't explicitly mention God.
Right.
But they still put out a lot of absolutely banging Christian music. But yeah, we had in DFW, we had K-Love, and then there was another station that was like the number one Christian radio station in America, 94.9 KLTY. And they had a bunch of like commercials about like laser hair removal and weight loss and stuff like that. And so we were like, this is annoying.
Oh dear.
And then in like 2012 or something, another radio station popped up. 101.7 that had much fewer commercials because it was more like donate to us. Like it was publicly funded and a much shorter playlist.
Yeah.
And they also played more upbeat music, edgier as my parents would say, which edgy to them just meant like danceable.
It had electric guitars in it somewhere. Yeah.
Well, it had like a little bit more of a hip hop beat, you know?
Oh,
like
yeah.
Toby Mac and stuff like that, but like not the popular Toby Mac stuff, the more like rappy Toby Mac stuff, which
right.
Like my parents did like that stuff until there was a single bit of rap in it. Then they were like, no, but there's a wide variety of Christian music. It reaches every genre.
Yeah.
But the message is a little different, obviously.
Yeah. That's the funny part about like the label Christian music. Like, I think when you and I like make jokes about Christian music, we're typically referring to like top 10 contemporary Christian music from like the radio stations we listened to growing up. So like Toby Mac, Mandisa, like all of that sort of crew that like made music that sounded less like just like anthem worship or hymns. And they made Christian music that sounded sort of like pop.
Yeah, a little more mainstream sounding.
Yeah, but like very explicitly Christian music. You know what I mean? Like, if you listen to it and you're at all listening to the lyrics, you know it's Christian. But, like, there also are for sure, like, a ton of other Christian genres, sort of, that, like, I think I at least tend to touch on less when I'm making silly jokes about, like, Christian radio stations. Because there are also, like, Christian rock, and Christian rap is something that has gotten really, really popular in the last 10 or 15 years.
Lecrae is probably the most recognizable out of all those.
Yeah, for sure. And then, like, I mean, like, now Lecrae is still just, I don't know, making absolute strides in a lot of areas. But I mean, my two youngest siblings listen to Christian rap with my mom in the car, which cracks me up. And they've been listening to KB. Is their favorite Christian rap artist.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, I really, really like KB's music. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm not going to sit here on the podcast and be like, yeah, I'm a huge Christian rap fan. It's just like, it's not a genre I'm fanatically dedicated to, I would say. But like, the KB stuff that my siblings have played me is a bop. I'm not going to lie. Or there's rap artists like Andy Mineo, who also just make like absolute 2010s youth group bangers, I would call them. Mm. Well, he did a song with Tadashi that was really popular.
I've seen Tadashi in concert.
Have you really?
Because he was in the that concert tour that we talked about that we both went to with Mercy Me and Family Force 5.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think Jeremy Camp was there too. I think he was the first act. No, he wasn't. He wasn't the first act. He was the first act for the William Graham tour that came to my hometown. And one of the nights, it was Tadashi. I forgot what they were called, but they did Build Your Kingdom here. What is that band called?
Oh, Rend Collective.
Rend Collective was there. It was like right before they got really popular. And Fireflight. So two very different acts. But they all, they were all part of this William Graham tour. Anyway, sorry, continue.
No, you're good. I just pulled up Andy Mineo's Wikipedia page, and his first mixtape's name is Sin is Whack Volume 1.
Wow. It's like right on the lines of, like right in the lane of Jesus Freak.
I was gonna say, if that isn't like 2000s Christian rap in like one title, I don't know what is. I will tell you though, the like Christian rap song that all the kids in the youth group at my current church are like bopping to right now, and I think it's been around for a little bit, so like, sorry if I sound outdated by bringing this up, but I promise you they're still playing it.
It's only gonna get worse.
It's Church Clap by KB and Lecrae.
I know that one. Okay, so my sisters did a little dance routine to their gymnastics group. They did this little dance routine to this song. And I loved it. And now that's like a part of my playlist. I love that song.
No, it's a banger. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Here's my like moment of transparency. Some of this is not Christian music related. So pardon me for getting on a rabbit trail on the Rabbit Trail podcast. But there are three songs that I call them like my system test songs.
Ah.
And it's songs I use to test PA systems. Just when I'm listening like to, I don't know, without getting too nerdy, when I'm like listening to the EQ, when I'm listening to like if I like the ratio of subs to satellites, etc., etc.
You might have to explain what satellites are.
Satellites, it's just satellite speakers, like any speaker that's flying from a ceiling instead of just like sitting on the ground or sitting on a pole, basically.
Yeah, not literally in space.
Yeah, sorry about that. accessible terms. But consider I have three songs on my system test playlist. My like criteria is it has to have a lot of bass, it has to have a lot of high end, and it has to have a lot of pan, like panning back and forth between left and right, so that I can hear if like the speakers are evenly distributed.
Billie Eilish songs are really good for that kind of thing.
Oh, that's noted. My first song on the system test playlist is the Kygo remix of Higher Love by Whitney Houston.
I love that song too.
That one's a bop. I will say I have to give full credence to Kiri's old boss slash my old audio professor from college, Bear Clunda.
Name drop.
He put me onto that song as a PA test. That's the song he always uses as an example when he's mixing or testing a new console or whatever, whatever. The second song on my system test list is a song from the Euphoria Season 1 track called Formula by Labyrinth.
Oh, I don't think I'm sure I've heard it.
If you're on TikTok, you've heard it. I like that one just because it has a ton of like descending bass. So and all the things and whatever and blah, blah, blah. But the third song on my system test playlist that I use when I'm like listening to speakers is freaking Church Clap.
Yeah. Because it starts out kind of quiet and then it like builds.
Yeah, it has a big fade in, fade out. So anyways, I just thought I needed to disclose like that aggressively weird variety of music that I use to listen to speakers, because Church Clap is in fact on that list.
I think that's beautiful. And now you're going to add a couple Billie Eilish songs, aren't you?
I really am.
So not sure if we should transition into this or if I should. Okay, what did? So did you know that there is an awards show for Christian music?
Oh gosh, the Dove Awards.
The Christian Grammys. The Dove Awards, yeah.
Yep.
Yep. This year, it is...
Well, I don't think 2022 has happened yet. I think
It's on October 18th, and it's hosted by Chris Tomlin and Erica Campbell.
Incredible.
I don't know. What does Erica Campbell do?
I have no idea. I've never heard of her before.
Yeah, me neither.
Chris Tomlin is
iconic.
Legend at this point.
Yeah, in the contemporary Christian music. Okay, the contemporary Christian music, that's the stuff. We'll get into it. Do you know what the categories are?
Oh, man. I'm going to be honest. I know a lot about contemporary Christian music, but I have never interacted with the Dove Awards.
So there's Song of the Year.
Okay.
Of course. Do you want to see if you know any of these?
Sure.
These are probably all fairly new. There's Be All Right, Believe For It, Come What May. I have heard that one. Good God Almighty. I have heard that one. Mm-hmm. Hold On to Me. Lauren Daigle. Yeah, I know that one. House of the Lord.
Yep.
It's Phil Wickham's song. Yeah, okay. Gyra.
There's joy in the house of the Lord. There's joy in the house of the Lord today.
The Christian radio station here overplays songs a lot too. So, Look What You've Done. Oh yeah, Look What You've Done. My Jesus, Promises, not to be confused with the Sam Smith song Promises. And Rattle.
Oh, the one by Elevation?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's by Bethel Music Publishing, so it's probably by Elevation then. Yeah,
I might be. I bet it's Bethel. No one come for me if I said that wrong.
I think, well, yeah, Bethel and Elevation are easy to confuse.
It is Elevation. I was right.
Both major mega churches,
yeah,
that like write their own songs. And then there is Songwriter of the Year, artist and non-artist categories.
What is the non-artist category?
I don't know.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I think, okay, well, two in the artist category are Matthew West and Phil Wickham. So I guess that means they wrote their songs and performed them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't recognize the names in the non-artist ones. So I guess maybe they just wrote it and then passed it off to a singer.
Huh.
Artist of the Year. Oh, the nominees for this one are CeCe Winans?
Mm-hmm.
Not sure. For King Country, of course. Maverick City Music, of course. We the Kingdom, Zach Williams. So those are some big names these days.
Zero surprises there, yeah.
New Artist of the Year, Producer of the Year, and then, of course, a Rap and Hip Hop Recorded Song of the Year.
Oh, wait, go back. Who are the New Artists of the Year?
New Artist of the Year, Ann Wilson. I have heard of her. She has a couple of songs on the local station here. Blessing Offor? Offor is spelled O-F-F-O-R.
Huh.
Doe, D-O-E? Not really sure. Jordan St. Cyr, heard of him. Or her, not sure. And Ryan Ellis, heard of him.
Cool.
Considering I've heard of these people, I guess that's good for them. So there's Rap Hip Hop Recorded Song. We've got KB on here, Lecrae, Social Club Misfits, all of those recognizable names. Rock and Contemporary Song. It's rock slash contemporary.
Right.
So like, this is where we've got Skillet. Let's see. What's another one? Citizens. Crowder.
Oh, I actually love Citizens. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, okay. I do sometimes like the rock contemporary ones. Sometimes. It's getting better.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting a little bit better. But pop contemporary, that's where things start to get repetitive.
I was going to say, that's where it gets almost cheesy for me.
Yeah, that's where we've got like Casting Crowns, their big name. King Country's on here as well.
Right.
Phil Wickham.
See, the tough part is, like, it's hard to sit here and, like, majorly detract from anyone on any of these lists, because, like, there are people who love every genre of this music, and it, like, means a lot to them.
Oh, yeah.
So while I might sit here and be like, oh, yeah, Christian pop is, you know, repetitive, and it's the same four chords, and it's cheesy, like, I, like, did a practicum at a Christian radio station this last semester, and, like, part of my job there was to do their like, phone fundraiser.
Yeah, I did that, too, yeah. When I was with them.
And so I just, like, hung out on the phone for a few hours with people who called in and were, like, just telling me all about how, like, listening to, like, Christian contemporary music just, like, changed their life. And, like, set them out on the right direction.
Which is great. And that
I know. Yeah. Which is awesome.
When you grow up with it, though, it's like, ugh.
So, yeah, it's a weird thing of, like, sitting here and being like, oh, yeah, like, I think top 10 contemporary Christian pop is cheesy. Yeah, I get to have that opinion or whatever because, you know, I've been listening to it for 22 years straight.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, my opinion's my opinion and I prefer Christian rock and whatever if we're all picking categories or whatever. But, like, at the end of the day, it's hard for me to sit here and find, like, legitimate reasons to detract from Christian pop. It's just not my preference.
So next up in the categories, so we've gone from rock contemporary to pop contemporary, now to inspirational song.
Oh, dear.
Of the year. Yeah. So I've Got Joy by CeCe Williams is up there. Someone's like, oh, I've got joy. Heard that one a few times. These other ones I don't recognize. And then we have Southern Gospel Song.
Oh, yeah.
Gaither Vocal Band is on here.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta have the Gaither people. What was the original name? Bill Gaither?
Something like that. I want to say Bill Gaither.
I think his name was Bill.
Sounds right.
Because I guess he passed away. Because he was.
Did he really?
Huge. I don't know. Let's see. Bill Gaither. No, he's still kicking. 86 years old.
Dang.
So I guess he just, instead of calling it like the Bill Gaither Band or whatever it was, now it's just Gaither Vocal Band.
Oh, yeah, because it used to be the Bill Gaither Trio.
That's right, yeah. I remember one of the guys was named Guy, and I just thought that was funny.
Gaither.
Yeah, we used to have like a DVD of one of his concerts. And when I say concert DVD, I don't mean like Taylor Swift Reputation Tour or anything like that. I mean like live stream church service type of concert.
Mm-hmm.
Circa 2002. Yeah. So Southern Gospel Song, Bluegrass Country Roots Recorded Song of the Year. Here we got Carrie Underwood, Dolly Parton, Ann Wilson, all these very bluegrass country roots people. Let's see. Contemporary Gospel. So these are all just different songs. Contemporary Gospel Song of the Year, Traditional Gospel Song of the Year. Let's see. Gospel Worship Song. So much gospel. Spanish language song. It's actually a lot of those. Oh, Maverick City Music did one in Spanish.
A Spanish song?
Yeah.
Which one?
It's called, oh boy, Jubilo? Jubilo?
Fair. They did a whole Spanish album.
Oh, okay.
I think within the last year, I think.
It looks like it probably means Jubilee.
Jubilo.
Worship song. So I think this is more in line with what we're talking. It's just worship song.
Right, like the anthem worship type stuff that you'd play in church on Sunday morning.
Yeah, here we have more Phil Wickham, Maverick City Music, Hillsong, all in here.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay, rap hip-hop album. Here we have Lecrae and 1K Few. Have you heard of
No, him? I haven't.
Apparently he did a collaboration album with this guy. And then rock contemporary album. Obviously we have Skillet, Switchfoot gained some popularity in the mainstream. I think because they did Dare You to Move. That one was fairly popular.
Switchfoot is another one like Skillet that has been around for literally forever. And by and here's the thing, by literally forever, I'm showing my age a little bit in that both Skillet and Switchfoot have been around as long as I can remember. So like a majority of my lifetime of a whole 22 something years.
Yeah, the Skillet and Switchfoot and probably Need to Breathe were also like the three main artists that were played at like youth camps and stuff like that.
Although Need to Breathe is much more recent in terms of their popularity.
Not really. I mean, they were already pretty popular in Christian circles in like the mid 2010s, I think.
True, but like Skillet and Switchfoot have both been making music since the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Need to Breathe got popular in the early 2010s.
Yeah, Need to Breathe was on Ellen once.
Were they actually?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because they did some just regular music, regular meaning just like not specifically Christian.
Yeah. Okay. I will say, Need to Breathe made, one of my favorite, like one of my top 10 albums of 2021.
Oh.
One of their like bread and butter things that they do as musicians is live albums. Because the thing, like Need to Breathe are amazing live musicians. Is their
thing.
You know,
I think I've heard that before.
They love the jams. They love the improv, like whatever. And so they did an album called Live from the Woods that was released in 2021. And it is incredible. Like, truly, even if you're not really into the, like, bluegrassy backwoods Christian music sound, like, it is the kind of album that you listen to in your car while you're driving to work and you want to, like, stomp your feet and clap your hands and, like, shout out your window, like, yeehaw. You know what I mean? It's so good.
Pop contemporary album of the year. Here we've got Casting Crowns, Crowder, For King and Country. So all these people. I've heard For King and Country is also really good live.
Oh, really?
They're a little more on the quote-unquote edgy side. The music is just a little more rockish.
I don't think I've seen them live. They did actually. They just passed through my area of Virginia. And, like, basically everyone from my church went and was like, it's the best concert I've seen in my life. But, yeah, For King and Country is kind of a CCM staple at this point. CCM being contemporary Christian music.
Oh, okay. I never heard that one before.
Really?
Well, I guess
that's, like, the typical abbreviation for it.
Well, listen, I didn't spend 4 years of college learning about worship music, so.
That's fair.
Inspirational album of the year. Here we've got Selah. Sight and Sound Theaters, interestingly. It's one of their Broadway recordings. Or not Broadway, one of their recordings from their shows. Sight and Sound Theater is a huge theater that does, like, Bible stories. Like, they do productions of Bible stories.
I was going to say, they are like, the Mecca of the Midwest to Christians.
Yeah, in Branson,
they're
Missouri.
They're in Branson, Missouri.
Where entertainers go to die, as my boss says.
Really?
Yeah, some people call it the Vegas of the Midwest.
That's funny. I'd never heard that before.
Yeah, because it's cheap and it's full of people who couldn't make it in the industry.
Oof. Yeah, I've never been to Branson. I've been told, like...
Me neither.
Sight and Sound is, it's one of those experiential theaters, in my understanding. Like,
yeah.
I've been told there's, like, live animals, mm-hmm. and they do, like... They have massive casts and stuff, but they do exclusively biblical content.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I would love to go to once. Love to go there just once. Next, we have Southern Gospel Album of the Year. I don't recognize any of these people, but one of the producers' names is Chris Crunk.
That is incredible. That's one of my favorite words.
C-R-U-N-K. Crunk.
Crunk.
Crunk. Chris Crunk produced two songs that are nominated.
It's getting crunk at the Dove Awards.
Yeah, Southern Gospel Album of the Year specifically. Then, of course, Bluegrass Country Roots Album of the Year, Contemporary Gospel Album, Traditional Gospel Album, Gospel Worship Album, Spanish Language Album, Worship Album. Okay, this one we've got Hillsong United, Bethel Music, Phil Wickham, Elevation Worship, and somebody named Brooke Ligertwood?
Girl, Brooke Ligertwood. Brooke Ligertwood has written basically every Hillsong hit in the last 20 years.
Okay, like, that's good to know. I'd never heard that name
she
before.
She wrote, like, Oceans and all this stuff.
Oh, wow. And by the way, Oceans by Hillsong has been a major meme in the Christian community for, like, since it came out.
True. Brooke Ligertwood is, like, making solo music now. She still, don't get me wrong, she still works for Hillsong. She still writes all their hits. But she's releasing stuff under her own name. Like, she just put out a solo album, I think, and stuff.
Seven is the one that she wrote. Yes, yeah, she's clearly doing well, nominated for a Dove Award, the highest honor any Christian artist could ask for.
Yeah, clearly.
Children's Album of the Year. Looks like Shane and Shane made one.
They made a children's album?
Yeah, it's called Worship in the World.
Aw.
There are only three nominees for that. Keith and Kristen Getty,
mm-hmm.
Slugs and Bugs, and Shane
Stop
and Shane.
Stop it right now.
Slugs and Bugs. And they're the album of theirs that's nominated is called Sing the Bible Volume 4.
Imagine learning about Jesus from
an
artist called
Bugs.
Slugs and Bugs. That's iconic.
I mean, it could be VeggieTales. VeggieTales put out a whole bunch of different albums. They did some covers.
Dude, you know what VeggieTales album I was recently introduced to?
Is it the country one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's gone viral on VeggieTales TikTok, which of course I am on.
VeggieTalk.
Yes.
Which is incredible because, like, how did I never hear about that until now?
Yeah, I never heard of it.
How was that never an internet meme until now?
Yeah, it's because it's the Jesus Take the Wheel song that's gone viral on VeggieTales TikTok. VeggieTalk.
Yeah.
And then Christmas special event album, you know, the typical people, Chris Tomlin, Matthew West, Maverick City Music, whatever. Musical choral collection of the year. No specific artists. So I guess these are just collections of musical / choral music.
Incredible.
Recorded music packaging. What does that mean, do you think?
Does it mean like album covers?
I don't know. Probably. Maybe. Well, here, look these up. Canyon by Ellie Holcomb.
Oh, I love Ellie Holcomb.
Well, she's nominated for recorded music packaging of the year. Of course, we got Lion by Elevation Worship, Milk and Honey by Crowder.
I wonder if it is like album cover, because the cover of Canyon by Ellie Holcomb is gorgeous.
Okay, so you got Lion by Elevation Worship, Milk and Honey by Crowder, Rise Up by Kane, and Seven by Brooke Ligertwood.
Ligertwood.
Ligertwood. I keep wanting to juh that G. Short form music video of the year. That's a category. Oh, short form music video of the year concept, and then short form music video of the year performance. Those are two different categories.
Interesting.
Oh, Newsboys is nominated for their magnetic music video for performance.
Newsboys is still kicking it?
Yeah.
Newsboys is another one of those like artists that kicked off their careers in like the freaking 90s.
Been around forever.
Yeah.
They did a lot of work with VeggieTales.
They did indeed.
Long form video of the year. Kim Walker Smith. Okay, so this looks like concert videos.
Mm-hmm.
Inspirational film / series of the year. So we're drifting away from music here.
Oh dear.
American Underdog, Blue Miracle, Redeeming Love, The Chosen. The Chosen was actually not bad.
I've heard good things about The Chosen.
And then the Jesus music.
Oh my.
I've never heard of that one.
I haven't either.
Okay, it's not showing me the next page, so that's it.
Amazing.
So that's the Dove Awards.
That was a lot.
Yeah, man. It's really nice to see that they are recognizing that there are genres of Christian music that aren't just worship music.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever, okay, as someone who performs worship music on a regular basis, sorry, leads worship music on a regular basis.
There you go.
Do you ever get bored with it?
To be fully transparent, yes. Here's the thing. Yeah, I get bored.
So it's like C, G, A.
That's the thing. It's like, it's very similar structure. A lot of the worship music that is done in churches.
Until things get spicy with the key change at the last chorus.
Right. But here's the thing though, like, as much as I get bored and I complain to myself about how I'm tired of playing the same sets of chords and playing the same songs and whatever, that stuff is what makes worship music accessible to everyone.
Yeah. It's like, it's in a range that everybody can sing. Yeah.
Like, I am a vocational musician. Like, this is what I do for a living. It's what I got my college degree in, blah, 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 blah. It is like, it is my job to be able to do this like it is a habit to me. Mm. Like, I should never have to think about what chords I'm playing, or like, it should never be a huge challenge to me to like have my set learned and be able to, because here's the thing, I have to go to church and I need to teach between 4 and 8 other musicians how to come together as a band and learn an entire set of these songs in like under 2 hours. And then we in turn need to come together and we need to walk onto that stage as a united group of musicians and lead an entire room of people in like worshiping God. And that's kind of a big deal because we need to be together on the music, and it needs to be music that makes sense to anyone that walks through the door. It shouldn't be music that's hard to learn. It shouldn't be music that is like scary to sing or hard to follow, because the goal is to like bring people in the doors to church and make them feel like they can participate in singing the songs just like everyone else. And so like, it doesn't matter that I get creatively bored sometimes, because like, This is like the music that unites an entire church.
Yeah. I've had issues with churches like that, where like the worship team, their songs are just so obscure and kind of hard to sing. It's like, please pick something that most people know.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. I would rather err on the side of scheduling songs that my band will know and my congregation will know, because that's what matters. Like, they are the people that matter. My band matters and my congregation matters. At the end of the day, it's not my opinion that should have the final say. The world does not revolve around me. I don't get to walk in and say, well, I feel bored today, so let's play some super difficult gospel music because I, a career musician, feel a little bored and itchy today. No. Like, if I claim to be there because I care about my church and I care about letting other people access worship music and love it the same way I do, then I should make it accessible to them. And sometimes that looks like scheduling top 10 music that makes me roll my eyes just a little bit when I schedule it. It's also the thing of, like, I can go to church and, like, make a song its own every single week if I go in with the right amount of energy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I can go in with the attitude of, ugh, I've played House of the Lord by Phil Wickham 29,000 bajillion times this summer. Or I can go in and say, hey guys, like, I'm really excited to play this song with you again. Since a lot of us know this, let's work together as a band to, like, find some ways that we can make this musically interesting, but also still make it the same House of the Lord that our congregation knows and loves to sing along with.
Yeah. Are there any songs that you just hate that you don't like performing at all?
Yes.
Reckless Love?
No, I actually love Reckless Love. Oh, that's okay. An unpopular opinion. And that's not because, like, oh, I was too young to have played it when it got beaten to death in 2017. No, I played it every Sunday when Reckless Love came out. I love Reckless Love. I think it's a banger of a song.
Okay, see, my association with you and Reckless Love is when Michael W. Smith came and we were setting up the interview and the band was rehearsing and they started playing Reckless Love and you just started screaming in the hallway. You were like, no, this is a meme. And you, like, hid your face in your shirt and everything. And the security guard looked very concerned. And I was like, do I need to remove you from the premises?
See, but at the time, it was a meme. When Michael W. Smith came, it was 2019. It was on the precipice of becoming the new Oceans. Mm-hmm. Because what happened with Oceans was a really popular worship music song got popular on the radio. And then every church wanted to play it.
Yep.
And they played it a ton.
Yep.
And then eventually they also played it in youth group. And it just kept playing on the radio because people could not get enough of this song.
And then they did.
And then two or three years into it, people were like, wait, we hate this song. We've heard it so many times. We never, ever want to hear it again. And now Oceans is, like, effectively banned from most churches. Like, I can tell you, like, when Oceans came out, I played it multiple times a month for multiple years straight. Once people got sick of it, I took a multi-year break from that song. I have played it once in the last 4 years that I can remember, genuinely. And it's possible that I've even only played it once in the last 5 or 6 years. Which, like, should never happen with a worship song that's good.
Yeah.
With a worship song that's good, we should play it enough that everyone learns it. And then just, like, work it into the rotation because it's a great worship song.
Yeah.
And so Reckless Love got kicked to the curb really fast because people were like, oh no, like, we don't want this to be the next Oceans. And it sort of worked. Like, I've played Reckless Love here and there in worship sets over the last few years, but I definitely don't play it nearly as much as I play, like, classic bangers like How Great Is Our God.
Oh yeah, classic.
Oh yeah, I will say though, my one, like, no-fly list song, and I have a story to go with this.
Excellent.
Is Good Good Father.
I was just thinking about that song. Yes, I dislike that one.
Here's the reason. I have a defense of my reason, because here's the thing. The lyrics are awesome. People love the song Good Good Father. I hate the song Good Good Father because the whole thing is written over the same chord.
It's just one chord?
Yes.
Wow.
So except for I will qualify. There are a couple of other chords that get introduced in, like, the bridge and the choruses. But, like, the longest parts of the song are these really long, wordy verses. And it's one chord the whole time.
It's wordy verses and then, it's who you are.
It's painfully slow. And the chorus is painfully repetitive.
Yeah.
And just for me, like, the song lost its substance, like, the first time I played it. And I kept playing it because, like, people love that song and they worship hard to it and whatever. And eventually I just, like, wrote it out of my rotation. Like, as of, like, 2017, I stopped playing the song Good, Good Father. And then I managed to go, I think I can say with confidence I went all of college without playing Good Good Father one time.
Other bands would play it, though.
But here's the thing.
In chapel.
I work at a church now. Like, I no longer am in college. I no longer am primarily working for a college. I work for a church. And a couple weeks ago, I was in a meeting. And
so adult of you.
I know. this awesome pastor who I get to work with was like, hey, so I'm preaching on this one day, and you know, we're preaching about the first line of the Lord's Prayer, which is "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name." And he was like, "So, like, you know, I'm just gonna preach on that verse alone, and we're just gonna, like, really focus on what it means to, like, have a Father in heaven and what the idea of his name being holy means." And I was like, "Okay." And he was like, "Yeah, so I'm thinking I would really like to end the service with the song Good, Good Father." And I was, like, devastated. Because here's the thing. Like, this pastor is awesome. He very rarely brings up specific songs that he wants me to play. And I was like, man, like, the one time he asks for a specific song, I cannot say no just because the song annoys me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I played the song Good, Good Father for the first time in, like, 4 or 5 years. And people loved it. And I was like, dang it. That sounds terrible. But, like, my congregation loved it. They were like, you know, like, that song just, like, connected so well to the sermon. Like, it was a great closer. And I was like, yeah.
It's like, we are not repeating the chorus an extra time this time around.
Yeah, for real.
Not today.
So that's my one song that I just, like, get annoyed with and try not to play.
Hey, speaking of annoying songs such as Reckless Love and Screaming in the Hallway before a Michael W. Smith interview, do you want to talk about when we met Michael W. Smith?
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I don't remember a lot of the details of it, but basically...
Yeah, the picture, you're just like, oh.
I'll give the broad strokes of the story and then you can fill in the details. Basically, what happened was in 2019, our university had a major milestone in its age, and so thus had a significantly sized and funded homecoming event. The crowning glory of this multi-day homecoming celebration at a Christian university was that they managed to hire, and I don't know how they did it to this day, they managed to hire Michael W. freaking Smith to come play at our college.
That was in the works for like the AVL team started talking about it about a year in advance.
Yeah, I believe it.
Like, there were already whispers of it my freshman year. So it was a big deal. Like, they had it ready to go for a while.
It was, yeah.
Apparently he changed tour managers like 3 times. Oof. Over the course of the prep. So our boss, Bear, was like,
that's stressful.
Oh my gosh. Like, there were some communication difficulties, but
all that to be said, for, and again, to provide more context for those of you that, like, didn't grow up as exposed to contemporary Christian music, Michael W. Smith has been around in the Christian music world
for
over 40 years.
Yeah, peaked in the 90s.
When I was growing up in the 2000s, listening to Michael W. Smith all the time, he was, no offense, Michael, if you're listening.
Yeah, he's obviously a fan. Yeah,
he was old then. When I was a kid, he was a staple. He was like just almost like, he was an icon. Like, he had been around for multiple decades already. Yeah. When I was a kid.
Yeah, I remember one of the album covers, he's like, it's like sepia tone and he's got a mullet and he's got like a knee up and he's like leaning.
Oh yeah,
from like very 80s core.
No, yeah, he yeah, he's been in the industry since he was in like his early 20s, I want to say. And he is definitively in his 60s now.
Yeah, he was older than I expected.
He was, yeah.
Like, in person. I was like, oh.
But yeah, so here's the crazy part. So he was supposed to be coming to our college. And at the time, Kiri worked for the AVL. Kiri worked for the AVL team at our college. And like my primary role that would get me anywhere near someone like Michael W. Smith was that I worked for the student media organization on campus that like did a lot of live stream and like some promotional content and whatever and yada yada. So basically, we got confirmation that he was coming for sure. And our faculty advisor for my job was like, hey, we should see if Michael W. Smith would be willing to give an interview to the student newspaper. And we could get our student media organization to film it. And like, it'd be a great opportunity for us to get to work on a video with someone relatively high profile. But the wild thing is, like, somehow Michael W. Smith and his people said yes to this thing.
Right.
So I went in the night before and I dropped off like all the video equipment, which was when I got to like come in as they were doing load in and setup for Michael W. Smith. So they were like installing the consoles and they were putting up the lights and just all this cool stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh. And it was like 11 p.m. and it was dark in there because they were working on the lights. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. Mm-hmm. Like at the time I was like, oh my gosh, squee. And so I dropped off all the video equipment like the night before. And we basically did a test setup of all the equipment to make sure everything worked. We picked a spot. We checked lighting, all the things. And then we stashed everything in a locked closet overnight. And then the next day we all did our busy homecoming event stuff. And then we all dashed in like mid-afternoon before Michael W. Smith's sound check, I believe.
Yeah, somewhere around that time.
And so we're like setting up this set, coordinating with like the student news publication and coordinating with the university's events coordination office and all this stuff. There were like a lot of moving parts. And at the time I also like had a shoulder that didn't work.
Oh yeah.
So I had tape all over me and I couldn't lift heavy things. And so I was just kind of doing like the point and shout thing, quote unquote supervising or whatever, because I could not lift anything. And as we're like, you know, busy bees, like everyone and their mother working on this video set, this skinny older guy like walks up next to me and like starts asking me questions and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, like we're doing an interview, like we're really excited, we're setting up right now and all this stuff and blah 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 blah. And like 5 minutes go by and he was like, well, when do you guys think you'll be ready to start? And I was like, oh, any minute now, why? And he was like, oh, like I'm good to get mic'd up whenever. And I was like, and like,
that's a good story.
praise the Lord that I had never been like, oh, and what's your name or anything stupid like that.
Yeah, he could have just been like, oh, Michael.
And in my defense to this day, because I know what Michael W. Smith looks like. When I was a kid, I was like his hugest fan.
Hugest.
In my defense, he was wearing like one of those quarter zip sweatshirts.
Yep.
With the collar flipped like all the way up. And he had a ball cap on that was tucked over a lot of his face. Honestly, probably on purpose.
Yeah.
So he was a little bit in incognito mode. And again, sorry, Michael, if you're listening, you're probably not. But if you are, he was a touch older than I was expecting. Because like most photos you see of an artist are very retouched.
And you can't see from the stage either.
And so I was speaking with this slightly older gentleman who was in incognito mode on the set for like 5 minutes before I had any clue it was the guy we were going to be interviewing that I was so excited to meet. What else did I forget, Kiri?
Well, I found some of my Instagram archives from that day for setting up. Here's this picture of us white balancing the camera.
Incredible.
And Rachel is holding up sheet music and sitting in the chair where Michael W. Smith would soon sit.
I sat in his chair. OMG.
Yeah. And I wrote, Peak Rachel is testing white balance with sheet music. And then the post I made later on, we have this picture of Michael W. Smith standing between me and Rachel. And Rachel is clearly fangirling.
Let me see. Oh, so true.
Yeah. Yep. And the caption says, a couple nights before this, I had a dream that I had to physically remove Rachel from the premises because she was fangirling too hard. Unfortunately, that did not happen.
Unfortunately, indeed.
Anyway, yeah, I remember that day pretty clearly because I had a meeting with a professor that afternoon about grad school applications, and I was like freaking out, and the professor made me like rethink everything, and so that day was a bit rough mentally. So I came on to this interview to help set up. Rachel freaked out over Reckless Love. I was like, oh my gosh, it's happening. I'm going to have to remove her from the premises. Anyway, Michael W. Smith showed up. I did audio, and we filmed it right next to the air conditioning room. And so every once in a while, it would just go and interfere with the audio. And I did not know how to denoise tracks yet.
Devastating.
So, yeah. So, like, looking back on some of that stuff now, it's like, I could have done this so much better. But we were college students. We were learning. We were rookies. But anyway.
Like, oh, yeah. And I will say, this has nothing to do with the fact that we shot an interview with him.
In 4K, too.
In 4K. Devastating.
Yeah.
Clearly, we should have shot in 6K. I will say, The thing that sticks out to me most, because I did of course attend his concert later that night.
I tried to, because it was at the same time as the play that I was working. And so after the play, I tried to like sneak in, but they locked the doors, so I couldn't get in. So I just went to bed.
Fair. Luckily for 5-year-old fangirl Rachel, I got to attend the concert, which was super cool. And truly, it was an incredible concert. Like, he's a great musician, hands down. And he had a band of, like, also some of the most amazing musicians.
Yeah, everybody was really good.
But the thing that, like, made me laugh, and I feel like I maybe took a video of it because I'm a horrible person, but, like, at one point, about 75% of the way through the concert, the spirit overcame Michael W. Smith. He was moved, truly. He sort of like fell to his knees while he was singing, and then they hit an instrumental, and the spirit just moved real hard, because all of a sudden, like, Michael W. Smith was laying face down on the stage, and the band just like vamped. They just like, they kept cycling through the instrumental because Michael W. Smith was laying prone on the floor. And so
was he okay?
Yeah, he was fine. He was just praying real hard, apparently.
Oh, okay.
But
sometimes it's hard to tell.
It felt like, no, it's for real. It felt like the longest moment of my life, because like my musical hero, as like a little Christian kid, was laying flat on his face for like 3 minutes straight.
Wow.
Of this concert, because the spirit moveth. So that's the, and you know, like there were portions of that where my internal dialogue was like, is he dead? And then there were portions of it where like my internal dialogue was like, oh, I should be praying that hard too. And then there were portions of it where I was like, if they play A over C sharp one more time. So
good times.
That's a little glimpse into my concert experience.
Well, we should be done.
So true. We've been podcasting for a very long time.
Yes. Speaking of laying prone on the ground, I think it's time for us to end this podcast.
That might be your best concluding transition yet.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you would like to hear more, please follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts. We're there too. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Curie_Jones at Rachel HNH. I might post that picture of me and Rachel and Michael W. Smith on on the
devastating
on my public account, so people can see what I'm talking about.
Thanks for that.
You can also follow us on TikTok at Post Production Pod. Until then, thank you for listening. This has been unless you have anything to add.
Oh, no, I don't.
All right. Go home. Lay prone on the ground. Feel the
spirit move.
Play an A over C sharp in the name of Rachel.
Oh, dear.
And Jesus.
Mostly Jesus.
But this has been the
Post-Production Podcast. Wow, we were almost, like, in sync there.
We were not for me, but I can sync it up in post.
Anyways,
goodbye.
Goodbye.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino online.
I was only playing for fun, so winning was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's favorite free online social casino. You too could have the chance to win life-changing cash prizes. Absolutely anybody could be like Mary. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and play for free now. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of the winner. We'll be right back.